Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Good morning and welcome to this week's installment of Beyond Governance here at 101.9 High FM. My name is Nimrod Tembede. As always, I'm delighted to share the space and time with you as we continue to unpack topical governance issues through the lenses of my esteemed guests who are knowledgeable in their field. In today's conversation, I'll be joined by Dr. Pilani Mtembu, who is the Executive Director at the Institute for Global Dialogue, to discuss the National State Enterprise Bill, which is before the President. Before we get to the gist of our conversation with Dr. Mtembu, in setting the scene, we all know that overwhelming majority of state-owned enterprises suffered a severe governance lapses, which meant they failed to add value to the fiscus. Instead, they drained resources by those who had political license to oversee them. We all heard from the Zondo Commission on state capture, which had six forums at the cost of over R1 billion, on how the state-owned enterprises were used to siphon billions of rands by politicians and their cronies for nefarious reasons. In addressing this colossal mess, government introduced the National State Enterprise Bill, which is viewed to try and address these fundamental problems. In making sense of these developments, I'm joined by Dr. Pilani Mtembu, who is an executive director at the Institute for Global Dialogue. Magusa, good morning and thanks very much for coming through and gracing Beyond Governance with your presence on this very important topic.
Thank you for having me.
Lovely. Dr. Mtembu, your overview of the National State Enterprise Bill, first and foremost.
I think what's important is firstly just place it within a broader global context. I think the challenges that South Africa has been facing within state-owned enterprises is not necessarily unique to South Africa, but of course it has our own characteristics. Several countries have been going through reforms around the role of their state-owned enterprises within their economy. And of course, a lot of those countries, whether it's in the global north, whether it's in the global south, major powers like China, India, have also been having these discussions. And I think in the South African context, it's something that was obviously forced on us by the performance of our SOEs over the past couple of years. SOEs are supposed to be enablers of development. They are supposed to drive development. And when you've had a period of time in South Africa where actually our SOEs have become one of the stumbling blocks to development, it was important for the state to rethink the organization of state-owned enterprises within our economy, but also to think of mechanisms that could potentially make them more efficient and more self-sustainable. I mean, over the last few years, they've been a drain on our fiscus. All these bailouts that have been going towards state-owned enterprises, but also confronting governance challenges such as corruption. You've mentioned the Zondo Commission. And so with all of those dynamics in mind, at a global level, but also at a national level, it was quite important that the state comes up with mechanisms to reform our state-owned enterprises.
Thank you very much for that overview. Which obviously sets the scene. What is quite interesting, based on what you have just alluded to, is the fact that we need to be appreciative of the fact that what we experience in the South African context, it's not something that is necessarily new for the global north and south are experiencing the same thing. But however, we will get deeper into the bill itself in a short break. Let's take a break. We'll be back now.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
When a nation comes together on buildrsa.co.za, it can only lead to a greater South Africa. All that's missing is you. Go to buildrsa.co.za to join the conversation, get involved in problem solving, and contribute to taking our nation to the next level. By South Africans, for South Africans. So, register for free now at buildrsa.co.za. The Great Africa. Together, we will build it.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. I'm joined by Dr. Philani Mthembu, who is an executive director at the Institute for Global Dialogue. We are talking the National State Enterprise Bill. Before we took that break, he was giving us his overview, which obviously sets the scene in terms of what the conversation will unfold. Interestingly, Dr. Mthembu, you put it to us that the state had to put mechanism to try and address the initial challenges which led to what you and I know in terms of corruption, malfeasance, and you name it. Let's hone in on the holding company, which the bill put forward as almost a panacea around political interference. To what extent do you think the holding company will be cushioned against political interference, which has become almost like an albatross around our neck, and not only around 30 years of the ANC rule, but even before that, we have always had interference of state, of politicians into the operations of state-owned entities, even though during apartheid, we did not hear so much about the kind of malfeasance, which is obviously a differentiating factor. Be that as it may, it is common cause that politicians were heavily influencing or involved in operations of the state-owned entity. But for now, the question is around the holding company. To what extent do you think politicians are likely to be out, or the administrators are likely to be cushioned against political interference?
No, I think it's a good starting point in a sense that the political interference is not something that is, let's say, unique to the democratic period in South Africa post-1994. Political interference has plagued South Africa's state-owned enterprises since they were formed, and we have examples of that throughout the apartheid period. So this really does reflect, let's say, a first attempt of trying to cushion these state-owned enterprises from that political interference. Of course, in creating a holding company, one of the key debates when the first iteration of the bill came out is that it perhaps provided too much leeway to the presidency. And so the question mark was, will that be sufficient in terms of shielding state-owned enterprises from political interference if the presidency is able to appoint boards without the necessary guidelines? And then subsequent iterations of the bill sought to address this matter by creating, for instance, or that obliging the president to basically create a panel that would look at appointments, that would go through interviews and make recommendations also to the president. And so that is an attempt to sort of shield these state-owned enterprises, to try and professionalize the processes of appointment, but also to try and professionalize the processes of oversight. But, you know, having said that, the reality is that the state will still be the sole shareholder in this holding company. And of course, the president will be its representative within that. But in attempts to sort of try to address elements of political interference, I think the initiative is both on panel that would recommend appointments. But secondly, I think it's also in the role of parliament. We shouldn't neglect the important role of oversight once this holding company is actually appointed, and ensuring that you have the necessary parliamentary portfolio oversight committee doing the necessary checks and balances in the operations and in the mandate of the holding company.
And those are very interesting observations that you put into us. Based on my assessment of the bill, you're quite correct that throughout the iterations of the bill, there was an attempt by obviously the advisors to and inputs from stakeholders and shareholders. President had too much power for him to not to be that powerful. The panel was obviously created as a mechanism to try and cushion the excessive power and unprecedented power, might add, according to the president. But when you look at the composition of the advisory committee, it's predominantly political officials. For example, the bill states that there will be three cabinet ministers who sits there, and there will be one representative from NEDLAC unions, and there will be one representative from NEDLAC representing business, and so on and so forth. So when you, clearly that composition does suggest that the overwhelming majority of the advisory committee or council is likely to be more political oriented. I'm saying this because we all understood that political positioning has vested interest. So to what extent do you think there will be less political interference based on the kind of composition that I've put forward to you?
Well, that definitely still remains one of the most contentious issues within the bill. But I think also what it highlights is it continues to highlight the reluctance of state actors in sort of putting forth a process which does have a stronger voice of. So, for instance, you're trying to professionalize the state here. You're trying to professionalize the operations of state-owned enterprise. Now, if you're going to professionalize, you need greater input from professionals, from bodies that are run by professionals. Now, not all of those will be run necessarily by the state. And so it does still highlight a reluctance from the state to relinquish a degree of control. And, you know, the makeup of that panel does also still leave open question marks around political interference. So I think if you had perhaps more representation, even from the private sector, you would actually go a long way in trying to address some of the concerns that are actually outlined, not only by civil society, but also from the research community, also by the private sector itself. So I would say that one of the areas that the bill in its current form, it has not amplified enough the specific role that the private sector will be playing in both the governance, but also in the operations of your SOEs, which would of course would be subsidiary under the holding company. And so this is still an area that I think is still a weakness, highlights perhaps tensions that do remain between the state and private sector, despite the reality that they need each other in order to run an efficient economy. In fact, for many of the operations that the SOEs will run, it will be partly to actually crowd in funding from the private sector. Yes, the state will take on a certain degree of risk that perhaps the private sector may not be in a position to do. But ultimately, in order to make these sustainable, you will need greater input from the private sector. So this still remains an area that I think does need to be addressed in order to have more or less consensus that the bill does put South Africa on a path towards professionalizing its SOEs.
I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Vey, because, I mean, this is what we have picked up, and this is what, us as a collective in different spaces, you know, we have done a bit of research and thinking about. So it's quite soothing to hear that there is consensus in terms of where we sit as a country, particularly on this particular issue of how the state or the reluctance of government to relinquish power or to ensure that there's a greater voice of civil society and private sector, for simple reason. The argument could be that there's no reason why state-owned enterprises cannot be run like a private sector, even though the motive is not necessarily about the profit. You know, profits. You, in your earlier session, you indicated that SOEs are meant to be enabler. They're meant to create an enabled environment for private sector to take advantage and really grow the economy. What is missing in terms of understanding and appreciating that how state-owned enterprises, in terms of efficiency, innovations, productivity, must be run and managed like an ordinary private sector, even though the motives are different?
No, and I think, you know, what's important here is that indeed, I mean, let's take an example, right? One of the most successful state-owned enterprises at the moment in Africa, at least in aviation, is Ethiopian Airways. Now, Ethiopian Airways is owned by the state, but it is run on principles that inform the private sector. And it allows Ethiopian Airways to compete, to become profitable, and it allows the state to reinvest a lot of those profits in developing Ethiopia, whether it's in infrastructure, social services, education, and so forth. Now, these reforms, if you take, for example, countries like Singapore, you take examples, even like China. And China also went through a process where they were sort of rationalizing their state-owned enterprises. The state remained key. And so the state was not, it didn't follow a path towards privatization. And I think this has been something that has perhaps been holding some of these reforms. Because at times, certain stakeholders interpret SOE reforms as privatization. It does not necessarily have to be privatization, but you do need to run SOEs so that they are able to sustain themselves, so that they are less of a burden on the country's fiscus, so that they are actually profitable or breaking even. That frees up the space for the state to reinvest in some of the other areas that it needs to invest in. And so it's a win-win. But in order to do that, you do need greater input from the private sector, both in terms of governance and oversight, but also in terms of partnerships. So the SOEs will obviously engage in public private sector partnerships, and this is something that is going to be important. So it also speaks to, I think, a shift in mindset. I think for too long, we've become accustomed to SOEs, not being efficient, to SOEs not breaking even, to SOEs not being sustainable, when in reality, these companies have huge potential to actually become more profitable. And I think this is really the challenge in operationalizing, let's say turning the bill into an act and then operationalizing. If it does not address the manner in which these SOEs are run, the efficiency that is there, and the principles, I mean, the fact is we operate within a market economy. And so if you don't incorporate some of the key principles of a market economy, then unfortunately, the reforms that are proposed are likely to fall short. So it is quite important that you have greater synergies between our SOEs, between the holding company that will be created, and the private sector. And that includes also in the composition of that panel. Because from the private, if you have greater confidence also from stakeholders in the private sector, the likelihood is that you are going to attract more partnerships also from the private sector.
These are very interesting observations that you put to us. And this, obviously, we hope that somewhere, somehow, these inputs will find expression in how the Act will eventually address these issues, which are quite pertinent. On that note, let's have a quick break. We'll be back in a second.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Dr. Mbele. I am joined by Dr. Pilani Mthembu, who is an executive director at the Institute for Global Dialogue. We are debating the National State Enterprise Bill in terms of its implications around issues that shaped in the very first instance corruption, maladministration, political interference, and you name it. Before we took that short break, a very interesting observation and insight was shared, Dr. Mthembu, here, particularly around the good example on how SOE needs to be managed without necessarily doing away with the role of the state. I mean, an example that was made was Ethiopian Airways. In the Ethiopian Airways is obviously owned by the state, and yet it is managed properly based on the private sector principle. In the same way, you've given us insight about Singapore and China, whose operations are becoming to be more and more efficient based on private sector principle. So these are obviously important insights, particularly when your quest is to professionalize SOEs with a view to free up resources that could be injected in the economy. So this is something that the bill needs to really focus on to ensure that we obviously move away from this dark cloud of how SOEs in the country have been thought about. And by way, if we move away from that kind of a mindset, one, in your view, we are likely to create confidence. And the outcome of confidence is that more and more stakeholders can partner with the state. If more and more stakeholders in the private sector in particular partner with the state, the assumption is that we'll crowd in investments. If you crowd in investments and also the technical know-how, we are likely to have SOEs that are professional and also SOEs that are making a difference in the economy. Am I correct to sum up that particular view from that end?
That is indeed correct, yes.
Thank you very much. The other issue that we've picked up, it's around the appointment of boards, which have obviously been a problem in the past. If the president or the holding companies appoints the board without necessarily looking at a specific template that focuses on meritocracy, to what extent do you think the bill, in its own envisioning, look at how we are going to use meritocracy as a pillar of a turnaround strategy? Because in the past, we all know that we've had board members that were not fit and proper in terms of the technical skills, in terms of the operational capabilities, and so on and so forth. Do you think this time around the bill will have a template that even draws from external partners, that even draws from global executives that are competent and being remunerated accordingly?
I think if there's real political will to professionalize the SOEs, I mean, I think one of the key, one of the things that perhaps people will judge the two terms of President Ramaphosa will be, to what extent has he been able to actually professionalize the state? To what extent has he been able to create systems and mechanisms that are able to prevent corruption, but to also ensure that the best of the best are in positions that they need to be. And we all know that one of the key things that plagued SOEs in the past has been, yes, the appointment of boards, but also there has also been an accountability issue in an extent that if you have a lot of political interference, it creates distortions in terms of accountability. Who accounts? So it normally put the boards in such a position that the boards will be able to blame political principles and some of the interference that they experienced from their political principles for non-delivery or for inefficiency. Now, you're basically blurring the lines of accountability, because on the one side, the board is saying, no, I was constrained by the political interference of our political principles. And on the other side, the political principles refusing to take full accountability would then shift the blame to the board. And then you have another reconfiguration of the board, and you have instability in terms of the running of those SOEs. So I think the boards really need to be given. Of course, the shareholder will play a key role in determining the mandate and the parameters. However, it's important that the shareholder gives proper leeway to the boards so that the boards can really assume accountability on performance, and that the political principles or the shareholder would play an oversight role, would play the role of giving and lending the necessary political support that is required, but not necessarily interfering in the operational elements of the board. But if you are to empower the board, then you also need to be sure and have confidence in the manner in which the boards are actually appointed. And as for as long as there are question marks in terms of the process, or at least big question marks in terms of the process by which the board is formed, then that continues to blur the line. So I think it will be very important for the administration to ensure that the processes by which these boards are appointed are actually acceptable, to professionals, are acceptable to ethos of professionalizing the public sector, but also that they bring a certain degree of confidence also from the private sector. And if you're able to do that, then indeed you are putting the country on a path where our SOEs can be much more self-sufficient. But the importance will be in ensuring that there is confidence in the process by which the boards are appointed, but also giving them the power to actually exercise their mandate so that you can actually hold the boards accountable and not blur the lines between the shareholder and the boards.
Absolutely. This is quite reinvigorating insight that you've just shared with us. One of the issues that I picked up, I was going through the bill and subsequent paper that we are all trying to put together with a view to make an input on how best to remodel the SOEs, for a positive trajectory that we need. So one of the biggest challenges is that, yes, the president obviously has been given almost like supernatural powers in an inverted commas, but it also goes to say that the president can delegate oversight of entities to a cabinet minister. And it's also very unclear on the scope of the delegation, and which also suggests that envisaged configuration of the holding company does not differ fundamentally from how the Department of Public Enterprises operated. Your take on that?
Well, I think part of the criticism is that it's almost like taking the current model, but then you know, sort of centralizing the current model. And that is an area that I think, you know, still hasn't been adequately addressed. So the one side, yes, you could say now it's the presidency that basically represents the shareholder. But in previous models, you know, you had the Department of Public Enterprises, you know, so you there it being essentially the key shareholder. So, you know, in that type of a framework, I think you know, what is clear is that from the time that the first version of the bill came out, it was quite clear that that problem was even more glaring. The second version of the bill, you could certainly see that, you know, that the drafters of the bill understood that there is great concern around the actual governance model and actually giving the presidency the type of powers that it gives to the president. And here we must remember that, you know, we're in an environment where there's greater political competition. Nobody can say, you know, 100% certainty, you know, who the president will be in the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, what type of ethics that person will actually espouse. And so it is dangerous to provide too much power in the hands of the president, because ultimately you're assuming that the president will always have the national interest at heart. And unfortunately, unless you have proper checks and balances, you cannot actually guarantee that. So the way that you basically safeguard yourself is to ensure that you have adequate checks and balances on the shareholder, but also on the operations of those SOEs. And so what the bill perhaps needs to address is it needs to go further than what the second iteration has done. Because one of the key things it will try to do is obviously without privatizing, but it will seek to foster greater cooperation with the private sector. And so there does need to be listening to the views of members in the private sector to say, what role can the private sector actually play in terms of the governance also of this of the holding company, but also in terms of the type of skills that the private sector will bring? Remember that in terms of actually operationalizing the bill and professionalizing, a lot of the appointments will actually have to be drawn perhaps even from the private sector. And so you do want to inspire confidence, and you do want to get a stronger voice within the private sector. It's not about the private sector having control. I mean, it's quite clear that the path we've embarked on is not a privatization path. And so with that being concluded, you can involve the private sector, but with a clear parameters and understanding that the path we're moving on is not the path towards privatization. And I think if you address that, you know, the processes by which the boards are appointed, if you address the management of the holding company and ensuring that there's greater consultation with the private sector, that would bode well for economic growth of the country, you know, over the next years, because essentially then you will allow the state-owned enterprises to take on more risk, but you will also then enable the private sector and actually lend confidence to the private sector investing in the South African economy. Remember that one of the big problems we've had in South Africa is that the private sector has had capital to invest, but they have not been investing that capital to the great numbers that could, you know, that it could invest. But you can address that through the governance structure of this SOE and ensure that by the private sector investing more in South Africa, you also create the momentum for foreign direct investment into the country.
No, those are very interesting observations indeed, which I certainly think they are also providing a solution, you know, for in most instances, conversations that are typically being thrown on out there are more on a blame game. And yet we need to really put our heads and minds together, shoulder to the wheel, and by making sure that whatever proposal that we have are actually building, and definitely what I've picked up and what the listener is picking up as well, we are in sync in that there are a lot of insights and inputs that are more progressive, and that obviously trying to make the SOE landscape much better. I mean, to make a classical example on the point that you've made is that in as much as the bill places huge powers to the president, the assumption is making that the incoming president, given the changing political spaces, would hold solid ethical grounds, and which may not. So it is important that from time to time we look beyond the current administration in anticipation on what could be the issue with the eighth administration from a corruption and malfeasance point of view.
No, absolutely. You can't make laws, you know, with the assumption that the implementers of those laws will always have the country's interests at heart. You have to make laws that, yes, may hope for the best, but they are also prepared for worst case scenario and are able to hold executives to account. And that is how you make good laws that are able to have confidence in the various stakeholders, but also to have confidence within society. And so you don't assume that everyone will have the best interests of the country at heart. And that is one of the key lessons we've learned, I think, from the past 30 years of our democracy.
Absolutely. On that note, my good doctor, we'll take a short break as we gravitate towards the end of the show. We'll be back in a secchi.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
When a nation comes together on buildrsa.co.za, it can only lead to a greater South Africa. All that's missing is you. Go to buildrsa.co.za to join the conversation, get involved in problem solving, and contribute to taking our nation to the next level. By South Africans, for South Africans. So, register for free now at buildrsa.co.za. The Great Africa. Together, we will build it.
Welcome back to Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Tembele. I'm having a fascinating conversation with Dr. Philani Mthembu, who is an executive director at the Institute for Global Dialogue. We are debating the implications of the national state bill in the economy. Before we took that break, my good doctor here was giving us very fascinating input around the danger of according the president substantial power for when you build this kind of structures, you not only just build it for one administration, you will build it for subsequent administrations. So it is important that there are proper checks and balances that are put in place. But as we continue, the last point that I want to raise, which I found quite tricky, and perhaps maybe you could untangle us for us. When you look at, in as far as the composition of the board is concerned, for an example, section 10.1 contains in the, it says there's an overriding phrase. When you look at how the board assesses, it says board will be assessed collectively. This for us, for me in particular, ostensibly creates a room for non-suited individual to be appointed to the board. Because when you're saying you look at the board performance collectively, what does it mean in terms of your recruitment, the rigorous of your recruitment and your selection processes to a point where you put in men and women to sit at the board level with prerequisite skills and competencies, because you don't just look at the collective, you also look at individuals. What value are they adding? Surely there's something wrong with that kind of approach when you look at the collective role of the board, as opposed to also unpacking and understanding what individual role of the boards are.
Yeah, no, I think, this is certainly an area. So earlier, what I was mentioning is that it's important to empower the boards, empower them to take decisions. It seems that at the moment, when it comes to accountability, you still have a challenge of sort of blurring lines of accountability. So who is the ultimate accounting authority? When things go wrong, who should we be looking at in order to hold accountable? Of course, the shareholder will always play a role. But If you are wanting to run an entity, if you want to run an entity and you want to empower that entity to become more self-sustainable, to go out into the market and to raise capital for various projects, then you need to empower those individuals with decision-making authority. At the same time, you know, when they do things correctly, yes, they need to be acknowledged. But also when things go wrong, it must be clear who is being held accountable. And so if you sort of focus, let's say, the idea of collective responsibility, of course, to a certain extent, there will always be a responsibility of the collective. But ultimately, that makes it slightly more difficult to hold each other accountable. You know, so my point here is that if you want to really do the type of things that the bill sets out to do, it's important that those who are firstly running, you know, let's say that holding company in the first place, but also those who are running the subsidiaries, it's important that they are empowered with the decision-making authority, and that it is quite clear that accountability, or that they will be held accountable, that there will be incentives for them to perform well. And so if they perform well, they can expect to reap, obviously, benefits at an individual level, but also, yes, at a collective level. But also, if things go wrong, you know which individuals to hold accountable. And so this is something that's going to become important if you're going to have real reform of our SOEs. Because one of the big challenges at the moment is that when things go wrong, everyone is pointing fingers at one another. You know, so the boards are pointing fingers at the shareholder. The shareholder is pointing fingers at the CEO, or pointing fingers at towards the board. And so there is no clear, you know, an unambiguous model of saying this is who we hold accountable, you know, for both successes, but also for failure. And if you want to move towards the idea of professionalization, if you want to take certain lessons also from the private sector, then you do need to understand that you must hold certain individuals accountable, and it must be clear who those individuals to be held accountable are.
Absolutely. I think those are very solid nuggets that you're sharing with us, so that we are able to know that board members, as you said, they should be sufficiently empowered to take decisions. And if those decisions backfires, there has to be somebody who's accountable. You cannot go and hold the entire board accountable. And when certain individuals could have, obviously, based on a so-called mandate, which they have, I think that that system is unsustainable, particularly when you're looking at the new thinking, which is required to make sure that there's accountability. Because accountability has always been a big, it has always been a very elusive thing in the private sector. So we're quite happy to hear you strengthening that particular line of thought, that line of argument, to say it is important for subsidiary, those who are appointed at the subsidiary, those who are appointed at the holding company level, are given sufficient powers so that they're able to take decisions. And if decisions don't work, we all know who to hold account. I think those are very useful insights. The last bit that I wanna get your input on, you know, the transition from Department of Public Enterprise to holding company, it's gonna take a while, and let alone transition of those 13 SOEs that will form part of a subsidiary or to form part of the holding company. We all know change management is one of the critical aspects putting any entity as part of turnaround strategy to a positive trajectory. The needle will never move unless or until we recognize change management. And in my assessment, the bill is very quiet on how change and change management system needs to be orchestrated such that we have a better SOE landscape. Your take on that?
It's a very important point, because I think, you know, you're talking about, I mean, these are massive organizations, and they have, you know, far-reaching impact both within South Africa, but also at a regional level. So you're talking about turning around entities that cannot necessarily be turned around overnight. So you're talking about a shift in culture. You're talking about a shift in terms of accountability standards. And so if you're going to do that, there's going to be a lot of work that has to happen already in the interim. Of course, this holding company will not be created overnight. But I think already what you need to be seeing is already efforts that seek to change the culture of our SOEs. So you don't wait until the holding company is actually created, you know, to try and embark on these changes in culture. And so the biggest task, I think, or one of the biggest tasks, is going to be around the changing of the culture, not only of in management, but also, of course, when you've had a bad culture in management, and when people are not held accountable at a management level, it also permeates to having lower morale amongst members of staff. And so the challenge is, how do you change the morale within these organizations and prepare them for them forming part of this holding company, but also of the incorporation of the subsidiary? And so change management becomes quite important. And I think that's where we do not necessarily have to wait until this holding company is operationalized. That is where I think you need to be already having engagements between the SOEs that have been that will form part of the holding company. You need to be having engagements already now with perhaps successful examples within the private sector, but also you need to be having conversations with the research community, people who have studied, you know, the difficulties of turning around companies, who have the examples that can bring about the empirical evidence. And so you need to be having these engagements, both at a management level, but also amongst the staff members of our SOEs, so that by the time this holding company is actually operational, you have already begun the process of turning around the mindset within these institutions, which is not going to be easy. But unless you have serious changes at a management level, unless you have a culture of accountability at a management level, then chances are that these entities will still be underperforming. And so that really will become a huge task between now and the creation of this holding company.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave here. Thank you very much, Dr. Mthembu. It has been absolutely beautiful getting your brilliant insight that has certainly sharpened our minds in terms of the impending trajectory of the National State Enterprise Bill. We hope that these kinds of conversation will be ongoing, so that we know exactly how to strengthen the implementation. Ultimately, the bill has to be translated into law. Once it's done that, some of the issues that you have brought to our attention ought to have been activated. Let's see how we could nudge the power that be to reflect on these kinds of issues as we proceed. Thank you very much for coming through, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed the conversation.
The pleasure was mine, sir. There was a Dr. Philani Mthembu, who is an executive director at the Institute for Global Dialogue, giving us a very good insights, observations, and to some point, very good example on some of the limitations of the bill, which should they be taken into account, we are likely to put the country trajectory slightly more upward when it comes to recovery, for we all know that the unemployment is quite shocking, poverty is quite shocking, And if we have a SOEs that are enabler, we are likely to reverse the frontiers of poverty and put South Africa back on a competitive map. Unfortunately, Liberty, it has been absolutely beautiful having you through. I hope you've learned as much as I did through the input that was made by Dr. Philani Mthembu. Meanwhile, have yourself a wonderful day and shalom.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom-line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.